From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
In the past few weeks, the price of tortillas shot up by more than 50% in some parts of Mexico. That's a big deal for most Mexicans because tortillas are a food staple. What are now being called the tortilla wars have become a big headache for President Calderon during his first months in August. In office, people have taken to the streets in protest. With me now for the second part of today's underreported feature are Sarah Millayana, Mexico correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, and also Professor George Grayson, a Mexico expert at the College of William and Mary. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Be with you, Leonard.
Now, Sarah, you're in Mexico City right now. How much does it cost to buy I guess it's a pound of tortillas, although people don't sell in pounds in Mexico. It would be kilos, wouldn't it?
It's kilos. It's about 2.2 pounds.
And how much is a kilo of tortillas these days?
It's about 78 cents. The average price had been about 5 pesos, and that shot up to 50% in parts of the country. It even doubled in some tortilla shops. But Calderon stepped in a couple of weeks ago and capped the price to 8.5 pesos, which is about 78 cents.
But some people are complaining that still caps the price at a lot more than it was just a couple of months ago.
It's not only that, it's also that the cap is not legally enforced. So there are thousands and thousands of tortilla makers across the country, and people complain that the prices are actually not being capped at that price.
So the cap was, would some people say, was just kind of like a political Band-Aid, something to protect
it's
himself?
It's been called a gentleman's agreement.
Uh-huh, and people have to sign on. If the tortilla maker decides it doesn't want to agree to the cap, it doesn't have to. So does that mean there's a lot of price variability throughout Mexico?
That's what's been reported in the local media. They're saying that in some places it's gone as high as 15 pesos, which is, that'd be about $1.30, I believe.
George, why has the price of tortilla shot up so much?
There are various explanations. One is that Mexico is importing ever more corn from the United States. And, of course, the prices have soared here because of the diversion of corn from food products and feed to ethanol.
Now, why is that even necessary? Mexico has a huge agricultural sector. Why isn't more corn being born, being grown there? And actually, corn comes from Mexico, doesn't it?
That's right. It goes back to the pre-colonial period. And in fact, the Mayans believe that they were created by gods who mixed their blood with ground corn. And Mexicans today call themselves children of the corn. But be that as it may, after NAFTA, Mexico began importing larger quantities of oil. I'm sorry, Freudian slip, because that may happen in the future. But larger volumes of corn, to the point that now imports from the United States represent about 25% of Mexico's consumption.
And isn't there also a problem with tortilla monopoly in Mexico, a virtual monopoly?
Well, there's a leviathan in the flour industry, and that's the name of which is Grupo Gruma, G-R-U-M-A. And that's a multinational corporation that probably controls about 80% of the flour market. And, of course, that flour is essential to the production of tortillas.
Well, how does a company grow that big?
In Mexico, there aren't lots of rules and regulations with regard to takeovers of smaller firms. It's quite a Hobbesian society in terms of dog-eat-dog competition without much regulation. And Gruma has systematically swallowed smaller firms until it's gotten to the point that it's the largest tortilla products producer in the world. And it also has a major presence in the United States and is in Europe, is in Central America, and of course is the 80-pound gorilla in terms of the Mexican market.
Sarah, is that typical of the way business is done in Mexico?
Yes, monopolies affect people's daily lives at every turn. I mean, the telephone industry is dominated by one company that owns 94% of the market. Cell phones is over 70% of the market. So everywhere they go, they face near monopolies or oligopolies.
And is this something that grew out of pre-policies, or is this something that has only happened more recently with a more conservative government in place?
No, after World War II, many economies in Latin America wanted to decrease their dependence on imports, and they industrialized with the protection of the state. And in Mexico, after the crises, economic crises of the 80s and 90s, they opened up to privatization. But a lot of economists say that instead of opening up the market, they just shifted hands to private owners.
And what was the effect on prices? Are people paying more for utilities than they might otherwise?
Well, for telephones, for example, Mexicans pay above the average, international average, and well above what Americans pay for telephone service.
George, I read in the paper today in the New York Times that people are concerned that this is only the beginning, that this means other food prices will rise as well. How do high-priced tortillas affect the quality of life for most Mexicans?
Well, the other food products have risen. You can think of eggs and dairy products and other consumables that use corn flour. So this is only the most sensitive of the items, because for Mexico this is the staple. But we have to remember that the march that took place yesterday afternoon and last evening to protest the hike in food prices also had a symbolic importance, and that is that the opponents of Calderon want to make clear that he's not going to be able to dominate the country the way he appeared to do during his first few weeks in office. And during that time, as you discussed with your previous correspondent, he had sent troops into Michoacan and into Tijuana and into Guerrero, a southern state, which is beset by violence. And he really was showing that he was the new sheriff in town and was generally getting positive reviews in Mexico. And I think that his opponents want to try to take him down a notch or two. And, of course, an Achilles heel is always the cost of staples, especially tortillas.
Well, are tortillas also a matter of class? Do they tend to be eaten more by poor people? Because Mexico has some of the best bread in the world, at least according to my experience. And it seemed to me that middle-class people and wealthier people ate more bread and fewer tortillas.
Well, the move is toward consuming more meat in Mexico, but still the typical Mexican family of four consumes about 1 kilo, that is 2.2 pounds of tortillas each day. And there is a disproportionate amount of consumption among the poorer people, but you find it in the elite also, because tortillas are a tremendously good source of vitamins, especially niacin, and the Mexicans have far few cases of rickets because they have stronger bone structures than do their neighbors to the north.
Sarah, how did the 2006 elections affect the Mexican public's faith in the electoral process? Is that one of the reasons that people are now emboldened to go up against him again?
I think so. You know, because of the political situation, a lot of analysts say that while Calderon comes from the party of business, he's going to have to, he's really going to have to address issues that Fox may have not been able to address because the election was so close and because people are so emboldened. I was at the protest yesterday, for Corn, and there were a lot of people there, and people just, like Professor Grayson said, people are just not going to let him dominate the public agenda.
Which is different than what happened in this country after the contested race between Bush and Gore in 2000. Because Mexico is a different place, or because the there are so many more people who feel that the election was fixed in Mexico?
I think it's both. I think there are still a lot of people who feel that the election was fraudulent. I think perhaps less now than right after the election. But I also think it's just the timing here in Mexico. I mean, there's been a groundswell, and people have really, you know, with Fox's win in 2000 and López Obrador, I think people really feel emboldened to take to the streets in a way they hadn't before.
Were most of the people you saw at the protests poor?
I would say most of them were lower class or lower middle class, and a lot of farmers groups and union leaders and a lot of leftists.
My guests are Sarah Miller-Yana, Mexico correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, and Professor George Grayson, who is with the College of William and Mary. And this is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. George, Mexico is known for having a very wide divide between rich and poor. Is that something that's immediately apparent in great urban centers like Mexico City?
It is. Mexico City is relatively well off compared to the rest of the country, but it's got some of the worst slums in the world. But you really see the grinding, hopeless poverty in the countryside, particularly in the southern states of Oaxaca and Chiapas and Guerrero and Tabasco. 10% of Mexicans control 45% of the wealth, and the situation has been getting slightly better in recent years, but only marginally so. And the closeness of the mid-2006 presidential contest has certainly sent a message to the National Action Party and to Felipe Calderon, because his first trip outside of Mexico City was to the poorest village in the country, in the state of Guerrero. And he made clear that there were going to be grassroots development projects to tackle the grinding poverty, and that along with enforcing laws, especially against narco-traffickers, was going to be one of the major items in his agenda. And he's committed to that, and we saw substance to that symbolic visit in his first budget, in which he sharply increased the spending on social programs.
So he's at least making symbolic attempts to bridge the gap between rich and poor. But we're talking about a country that has the world's third richest man, Carlos Slim, and has more billionaires than Switzerland. And that has to be, to some degree, as a result of government policies.
Well, it is, because the richest man in Latin America, Carlos Slim, who Sarah indicated controls the phone company there, Telmex, really was able to acquire dominant ownership thanks to a sweetheart relationship with the government. But Mexico is also an incredibly wealthy country. Oil, natural gas, gold, silver, beaches, historic artifacts, and on and on and on, not least of which just marvelously sympathetic people. So it's been poorly governed. The corruption is ubiquitous, but the concentrations of economic power are really the major impediment to sustained growth. And one of the roles that Felipe Calderon will have to play is that of a latter-day Teddy Roosevelt in standing up to the trusts and trying to break them.
Well, Sarah, has President Calderon addressed the problem of monopolies?
He's
Was that a campaign issue?
He's spoken out against monopolies. He said in a press conference that he felt that monopolies were not the best way to grow the economy, and he's constantly, you know, saying that he's the jobs president. He campaigned on that. I think the school of thought about whether he'll be able to do anything about it is divided. As I said earlier, because of the political situation, he might have to. But at the same time, a lot of the people who run these big companies were his biggest supporters. It was López Obrador who really came out against monopolies and the elite in the country. So, you know, he's going to have to prove that he's not beholden to interests.
And López Obrador has injected himself into these tortilla wars. He addressed the crowd of protesters yesterday. Do you think that he sees this as a wedge issue?
López Obrador, and at the risk of being self-promoting, I wrote a book about him last year. He has a messianic complex. He thinks he's destined to uplift the downtrodden of Mexico, and so he hasn't accepted Calderón's victory. He's declared himself the legitimate president. He's formed a cabinet of 12 individuals, much like the 12 apostles, and he continues to barnstorm the country as if the campaign were still on. And he did take advantage of the demonstration yesterday to make a lengthy speech, a half-hour speech, in which he denounced the running dogs of capitalism and called for price controls, called for a renegotiation of NAFTA, and blasted the large conglomerates that control Mexico's food supply.
Well, considering Mexico's problems, wouldn't something drastic be necessary to change things?
Well, I think the specter of López Obrador, whose ideas are really not so much leftist as they are the old pre in terms of big government, generous social programs, a lot of intervention in the economy, protectionism, the failure to open the oil industry and things of that sort. The fact that he came within a fraction of a percentage point of winning the presidency, I think has raised awareness on the part of the elites in Mexico that they can't simply continue as fat and happy beneficiaries of a highly distended economy in which the few control most of the wealth.
So we have that problem. We have Mexico being politically divided, and then trouble throughout the country in one of the tourist favorite cities, Oaxaca. There have been riots. What effect has that had on tourism, Sarah? Sarah, are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was wondering whether the image of Mexico as a country that is suffering from serious unrest is having an impact.
Well, it has. The ambassador had issued some travel warnings here, and anecdotally, people on the streets, especially during the sit-ins after the presidential election when López Obrador supporters were camping out on Reforma, people were talking about, you know, not having such a great image of Mexico. But Oaxaca seems to have improved, and, you know, they're cleaning up buildings that were spray-painted with graffiti, and I think President Calderon realizes how important tourism is or should be to Mexico, and they're really trying to, with the fight against drug cartels, really trying to clean it up.
Of course, the rich-poor divide has a major impact on this country as well, because it's led to illegal immigration, or undocumented aliens, as some people would prefer.
No,
for me
I
to
think
say.
One should say illegal immigrants, using euphemisms like undocumented workers is sort of like calling a bank robber an unauthorized withdrawal agent. But they're hardworking, they're looking for opportunities, and they're not being treated well by the nomenclatura in Mexico. There are still dramatic class differences, and the wealthy treat the poor as if they were brain damaged in many areas. And so it does, the failure of Mexico's elite to mobilize its bountiful resources and to spend more on education and health care has certainly driven many people with get up and go to attempt to make it into the United States.
Well, Sarah, how about the difference in the elite? Aren't most of the people in the elite from European backgrounds, whereas most of the poor are from have backgrounds amongst the indigenous peoples?
Yes, that's generally true, and I think visitors are always surprised on their first visit here to notice that, you know, just the divide between the races, that generally the elite are very white and come from Spanish descent, and the poor do not, so they
well,
come from...
President Calderon has touted himself as the jobs president. Do you think that any of the proposals he has made have a chance of having much of an impact?
I think it depends on what happens in the legislature and how well he is able to form alliances. A lot of the changes will need new laws, and that's really where Fox failed. So people have say that Calderon is a much better negotiator. He's much more politically savvy, so there is hope that he'll be able to push some of these through.
I want to thank you both so much for participating in Underreported Today. Sarah Miller-Yana, who is the Mexico correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, and Professor George Grayson, a Mexico expert at the College of William and Mary.
Thank you very much, Leonard.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.